There were bandages to be laid out, medicines to be retrieved from the cabinets, instruments to be washed and sterilized, fees to be collected, and receipts written. Some pets, afflicted with vomiting and diarrhea, left messes to be cleaned up, but Travis and Nora tended to those unpleasantnesses as uncomplainingly and unhesitatingly as they performed other tasks. They had two motives, the first of which was that by assisting Keen, they had a chance to be in the surgery with Einstein throughout the afternoon. Between chores, they stole a few moments to pet the retriever, speak a few encouraging words to him, and reassure themselves that he was getting no worse. The downside of being around Einstein continuously was that they could see, to their dismay, that he did not seem to be getting any better, either. Their other purpose was to further ingratiate themselves with the vet, to give him a reason to be beholden to them, so he would not reconsider his decision to allow them to stay the night. The patient load was far greater than usual, Keane said, and they were not able to close the office till after 6 o'clock. Weariness and the labor they shared generated a warm feeling of camaraderie. As they made and ate dinner together, Jim Keane entertained them with a treasure of amusing animal stories culled from his experiences, and they were almost as comfortable and friendly as they would have been if they had known the vet for months instead of less than one day. Keane prepared the guest bedroom for them and provided a few blankets with which to make a crude bed on the floor of the surgery. Travis and Nora would sleep in the real bed in shifts, each spending half the night on the floor with Einstein. Travis had the first shift, from 10 o'clock until 3 in the morning. Only one light was left on in the far corner of the surgery, and Travis alternately sat and stretched out on the piled blankets in the shadows where Einstein lay. Sometimes Einstein slept, and the sound of his breathing was more normal, less frightening. But sometimes he was awake, and his respiration was horribly labored, and he whimpered in pain, and Travis somehow knew, in fear. When Einstein was awake, Travis talked to him, reminiscing about experiences they had shared, the many good moments and happy times over the past 6 months, and the retriever seemed to be at least slightly soothed by Travis's voice. Unable to move at all, the dog was of necessity incontinent. A couple of times he peed on the plastic-covered mattress, with no distaste whatsoever, with the same tenderness and compassion a father might show in caring for a gravely ill child, Travis cleaned up. In a curious way, Travis was even pleased by the mess, because every time Einstein peed, it was proof that he still lived, still functioned, in some ways, as normally as ever. Rain squalls came and went during the night. The sound of rain on the roof was mournful, like funeral drums. Twice during the first shift, Jim Keane appeared in pajamas and a robe. The first time he examined Einstein carefully and changed his IV bottle. Later he administered an injection after the examination. On both occasions he assured Travis that right now they did not have to see signs of improvement to be encouraged. Right now it was good enough that there were no indications of deterioration in the dog's condition. Frequently during the night, Travis wandered to the other end of the surgery and read the words of a simply framed scroll that hung above the scrub sink. Tribute to a dog. The one absolutely unselfish friend that man can have in this selfish world. The one that never deserts him. The one that never proves ungrateful or treacherous is his dog. A man's dog stands by him in prosperity and in poverty, in health and in sickness. He will sleep on the cold ground, where the wintry winds blow and the snow drives fiercely, if only he may be near his master's side. He will kiss the hand that has no food to offer. He will lick the wounds and sores that come in encounter with the roughness of the world. He guards the sleep of his pauper master as if he were a prince. When all other friends desert, he remains. When riches take wing and reputation falls to pieces, he is as constant in his love as the sun in its journey through the heavens. Senator George Vest, 1870. Each time he read the tribute, Travis was filled anew with wonder at Einstein's existence. What fantasy of children was more common than that their dogs were fully as perceptive and wise and clever as any adult? What gift from God would more delight a young mind than to have the family dog prove able to communicate on a human level, and to share triumphs and tragedies with full understanding of their meaning and importance. What miracle could bring more joy, more respect for the mysteries of nature, more sheer exuberance over the unanticipated wonders of life? Somehow, in the very idea of a dog's personality and human intelligence combined in a single creature, one had a hope of a species at once as gifted as humankind, but more noble and worthy. And what fantasy of adults was more common than that one day another intelligent species would be found to share the vast cold universe, and by sharing it would at last provide some relief from our race's unspeakable loneliness and sense of quiet desperation? And what other loss could be more devastating than the loss of Einstein? This first hopeful evidence that humankind carried within it the seeds not merely of greatness, but of godhood. These thoughts, which Travis could not suppress, shook him and drew him from a thick sob of grief. Damning himself for being an emotional basket case, he went into the downstairs hall, where Einstein would not be aware of, and perhaps be frightened by, his tears. Nora relieved him at 3 a.m. She had to insist that he go upstairs, for he was reluctant to leave Keene's surgery. Exhausted but protesting that he would not sleep, Travis tumbled into bed and slept. He dreamed of being pursued by a yellow-eyed thing with wicked talons and foreshortened alligator jaws. He was trying to protect Einstein and Nora, pushing them in front of him, encouraging them to run, run, run. But somehow the monster got around Travis and tore Einstein to pieces, then savaged Nora. It was the Cornell curse, which could not be avoided by a simple change of name to Samuel Hyatt. And at last Travis stopped running and fell to his knees and lowered his head, because having failed Nora and the dog, he wanted to die. And he heard the thing approaching, click, 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 and he was afraid, but he also welcomed the death that it promised. Nora woke him shortly before 5 a.m.
"Einstein," she said urgently, "he's having convulsions."
When Nora led Travis into the white-walled surgery, Jim Keene was crouched over Einstein, ministering to him. They could do nothing but stay out of the vet's way, give him room to work. She and Travis held each other. After a few minutes, the vet stood up. He looked worried, and he did not make his usual effort to smile or try to lift their hopes. "I've given him additional anticonvulsants. I think he'll be all right now."
"Has he gone into the second stage?" Travis asked.
"Maybe not," Keene said.
"Could he be having convulsions and still be in the first stage?"
"It's possible," Keene said.
"But not likely."
"Not likely," Keene said, "but not impossible." Second stage distemper, Nora thought miserably. She held Travis tighter than ever. Second stage. Brain involvement. Encephalitis. Chorea. Brain damage. Brain damage.
Travis would not return to bed.
He remained in the surgery with Nora and Einstein the rest of that night. They turned on another light, brightening the room somewhat, but not enough to bother Einstein, and they watched him closely for signs that the distemper had progressed to the second stage, the jerking and twitching and chewing movements of which Jim Keene had spoken. Travis was unable to extract any hope from the fact that no such symptoms were exhibited. Even if Einstein was in the first stage of the disease and remained there, he appeared to be dying. The next day, Friday, December 3rd, Jim Keene's assistant was still too sick to come to work, so Nora and Travis helped out again. By lunchtime, Einstein's fever had not fallen. His eyes and nose continued to ooze a clear, though yellowish, fluid. His breathing was slightly less labored, but in her despair, Nora wondered if the dog's respiration only sounded easier because he was not making as great an effort to breathe and was, in fact, beginning to give up. She could not eat even a bite of lunch. She washed and ironed both Travis's clothes and her own, while they sat around in two of Jim Keene's spare bathrobes, which were too big for them. That afternoon, the office was busy again. Nora and Travis were kept in constant motion, and Nora was glad to be overworked. At 4:30,
a time that she would never forget for as long as she lived. Just after they finished helping Jim deal with a difficult Irish setter, Einstein yipped twice from his bed in the corner. Nora and Travis turned, both gasping, both expecting the worst. For this was the first sound other than whimpers that Einstein had made since his arrival at the surgery. But the retriever had lifted his head. The first time he'd had the strength to lift it, and was blinking at them. He looked around curiously, as if to ask where on earth he was. Jim knelt beside the dog, and while Travis and Nora crouched expectantly behind him, he thoroughly examined Einstein. "Look at his eyes. They're slightly milky, but not at all like they were, and they've stopped actively leaking." With a damp cloth, he cleaned the crusted fur beneath Einstein's eyes and wiped off his nose. The nostrils no longer bubbled with fresh excretions. With a rectal thermometer, he took Einstein's temperature, and reading it said, "Falling. Down 2 full degrees. "Thank God," Travis said, and Nora discovered that her eyes were filling with tears again. Jim said, "He's not out of the woods yet. His heartbeat is more regular, less accelerated, though still not good. Nora, get one of those dishes over there and fill it with some water." Nora returned from the sink a moment later and put the dish down on the floor at the vet's side. Jim pushed it close to Einstein. "What do you think, fella?" Einstein raised his head off the mattress again and stared at the dish. His lolling tongue looked dry and was coated with a gummy substance. He whined and licked his chops. "Maybe," Travis said. "If we help him, no," Jim Keane said. "Let him consider it. He'll know if he feels up to it. We don't want to force water that's going to make him vomit again. He'll know by instinct if the time is right." With some groaning and wheezing, Einstein shifted on the foam mattress, rolling off his side, half onto his belly. He put his nose to the dish, sniffed the water, put his tongue to it tentatively, liked the first taste, had another, and drank a third of it before sighing and lying down again. Stroking the retriever, Jim Keane said, "I'd be very surprised if he doesn't recover, fully recover, in time." In time. That phrase bothered Travis. How much time would Einstein require for a full recovery? When the outsider finally arrived, they would all be better off if Einstein was healthy, and if all of his senses were functioning sharply. The infrared alarms notwithstanding, Einstein was their primary early warning system. After the last patient left at 5:30, Jim Keane slipped out for half an hour on a mysterious errand, and when he returned, he had a bottle of champagne. "I'm not much of a drinking man, but certain occasions demand a nip or two." Nora had pledged to drink nothing during her pregnancy, but even the most solemn pledge could be stretched under these circumstances. They got glasses and drank in the surgery, toasting Einstein, who watched them for a few minutes, but exhausted, soon fell asleep. "But a natural sleep," Jim noted, "not induced with sedatives." Travis said, "How long will he need to recover?" "To shake off distemper, a few more days, a week. I'd like to keep him here 2 more days anyway. You could go home now if you want, but you're also welcome to stay. You've been quite a help."
"We'll stay," Nora said at once.
"But after the distemper's beaten," Travis said. "He's going to be weak, isn't he?"
"At first, very weak," Jim said.
"But gradually, he'll get most, if not all, of his old strength back. I'm sure now that he never went into second-stage distemper, in spite of the convulsions. So perhaps by the first of the year, he'll be his old self, and there should be no lasting infirmities, no palsied shaking or anything like that."
The first of the year.
Travis hoped that would be soon enough. Again, Nora and Travis split the night into 2 shifts. Travis took the first watch, and she relieved him in the surgery at 3 o'clock in the morning. Fog had seethed into Carmel. It roiled at the windows, softly insistent. Einstein was sleeping when Nora arrived, and she said, "Has he been awake much?"
"Yeah," Travis said. "Now and then."
"Have you talked to him?"
"Yeah."
"Well?" Travis's face was lined, haggard, and his expression was grave. "I've asked him questions that can be answered with a yes or no.
And?
He doesn't answer them. He just blinks at me, or yawns, or he goes back to sleep.
He's very tired yet, she said,
desperately hoping that was the explanation for the retriever's uncommunicative behavior. He doesn't have the strength even for questions and answers.
Pale and obviously depressed, Travis said, Maybe, I don't know, but I think he seems confused.
He hasn't shaken the disease yet, she said. He's still in the grip of it, beating the damn stuff, but still in its grip. He's bound to be a little muddle-headed for a while yet.
Confused, Travis repeated.
It'll pass.
Yeah, he said. Yeah, it'll pass. But he sounded as if he believed that Einstein would never be the same again.
Nora knew what Travis must be thinking. It was the Cornell curse again, which he professed not to believe in, but which he still feared in his heart of hearts. Everyone he loved was doomed to suffer and die young. Everyone he cared about was torn from him. That was all nonsense, of course, and Nora did not believe in it for a moment. But she knew how hard it was to shake off the past, to face only toward the future, and she sympathized with his inability to be optimistic just now. She also knew there was nothing she could do for him to haul him out of that pit of private anguish, nothing except kiss him, hold him for a moment, then send him off to bed to get some sleep. When Travis was gone, Nora sat on the floor beside Einstein and said, There's some things I have to tell you, Furface. I guess you're asleep and can't hear me, and maybe even if you were awake, you wouldn't understand what I'm saying. Maybe you'll never understand again, which is why I want to say these things now, while there's at least still hope that your mind's intact. She paused and took a deep breath and looked around at the still surgery, where the dim lights gleamed in the stainless steel fixtures and in the glass of the enameled cabinets. It was a lonely place at 3:30 in the morning. Einstein's breath came and went with a soft hiss, an occasional rattle. He didn't stir. Not even his tail moved.
I thought of you as my guardian, Einstein. That's what I called you once, when you saved me from Arthur Streck. My guardian. You not only rescued me from that awful man, you also saved me from loneliness and terrible despair. And you saved Travis from the darkness within him, brought us together. And in 100 other ways, you were as perfect as any guardian angel might hope to be. In that good, pure heart of yours, you never asked for or wanted anything in return for all you did. Some milk bones once in a while, a bit of cake now and then. But you'd have done it all even if you'd been fed nothing but dog chow. You did it because you love, and being loved in return was reward enough. And by just being what you are, Furface, you taught me a great lesson, a lesson I can't easily put into words. For a while, silent and unable to speak, she sat in the shadows behind her friend, her child, her teacher, her guardian. But damn it, she said at last, I've got to find words, because maybe this is the last time I can even pretend you're able to understand them. It's like this. You taught me that I'm your guardian, too, that I'm Travis's guardian, and that he is my guardian and yours. We have a responsibility to stand watch over one another. We are watchers, all of us, watchers, guarding against the darkness. You've taught me that we're all needed, even those who sometimes think we're worthless, plain, and dull. If we love and allow ourselves to be loved, well, a person who loves is the most precious thing in the world, worth all the fortunes that ever were. That's what you've taught me, Furface. And because of you, I'll never be the same. The rest of the long night, Einstein lay motionless, lost in a deep sleep. Saturday, Jim Keane kept hours only in the morning. At noon, he locked the office entrance at the side of his big, cozy house. During the morning, Einstein had exhibited encouraging signs of recovery. He drank more water and spent some time on his belly instead of lying limply on his side. Head raised, he looked around with interest at the activity in the vet surgery. He even slurped up a raw egg and gravy mixture that Jim put in front of him, downing half the contents of the dish, and he did not regurgitate what he had eaten. He was now entirely off intravenous fluids. But he still dozed a lot, and his responses to Travis and Nora were only those of an ordinary dog.
After lunch, as they were sitting with Jim at the kitchen table having a final cup of coffee, the vet sighed and said, "Well, I don't see how this can be put off any longer." From an inner pocket of his old, well-worn corduroy jacket, he withdrew a folded sheet of paper and put it on the table in front of Travis. For a moment, Nora thought it was the bill for his services. But when Travis unfolded the paper, she saw that it was a wanted flyer put out by the people looking for Einstein. Travis's shoulders sagged. Feeling as if her heart had begun to sink down through her body, Nora moved closer to Travis so they could read the bulletin together. It was dated last week. In addition to a description of Einstein that included the three-number tattoo in his ear, the flyer stated the dog would most likely be found in the possession of a man named Travis Cornell and his wife, Nora, who might be living under different names. Descriptions and photographs of Nora and Travis were at the bottom of the sheet. "How long have you known?" Travis asked. Jim Keane said, "Within an hour after I first saw him Thursday morning. I've been getting weekly updates of that bulletin for 6 months. I've had 3 follow-up calls from the Federal Cancer Institute to make sure I'll remember to examine any golden retriever for a lab tattoo and report it at once."
"And have you reported him?" Nora asked.
"Not yet. Didn't seem any point arguing about it until we saw whether he's going to pull through."
Travis said,
"Will you report him now?"
His hound dog face settling into an expression that was even more glum than usual, Jim Keane said, "According to the Cancer Institute, this dog was at the very center of extremely important experiments that might lead to a cancer cure. Says that millions of dollars of research money will have been spent for nothing if the dog isn't found and returned to the lab to complete their studies."
"It's all lies," Travis said.
"Let me make one thing very clear to you," Jim said, leaning forward in his chair and folding his large hands around his coffee cup. "I'm an animal lover to the bone. I've dedicated my life to animals, and I love dogs more than anything else. But I'm afraid I don't have a lot of sympathy for people who believe that we should stop all animal experimentation. People who think medical advancements that help save human lives are not worth harming one guinea pig, one cat, one dog. People who raid labs and steal animals, ruining years of important research. They make me want to spit. It's good and right to love life, to dearly love it in all its most humble forms. But these people don't love life. They revere it, which is a pagan and ignorant and perhaps even savage attitude."
"This isn't like that," Nora said. "Einstein was never used in cancer research. That's just a cover story. The Cancer Institute isn't hunting for Einstein. It's the National Security Agency that wants him."
She looked at Travis and said,
"Well, what do we do now?"
Travis smiled grimly and said, "Well, I sure can't kill Jim here to stop him."
The vet looked startled.
"So I guess we've got to persuade him," Travis finished.
"The truth?" Nora asked.
Travis stared at Jim Keane for a long time, and at last said, "Yeah, the truth. It's the only thing that might convince him to throw that damn wanted poster in the trash."
Taking a deep breath, Nora said, "Jim, Einstein is as smart as you or me or Travis."
"Smarter, I sometimes think," Travis said.
The vet stared at them, uncomprehending.
"Let's make another pot of coffee," Nora said. "This is going to be a long, long afternoon."
Hours later, at 5:10, Saturday afternoon, Nora and Travis and Jim Keane crowded in front of the mattress on which Einstein lay. The dog had just taken a few more ounces of water. He looked at them with interest, too. Travis tried to decide if those large brown eyes still had the strange depth, uncanny alertness, and undog-like awareness that he had seen them so many times before. Damn, he was not sure, and his uncertainty scared him. Jim examined Einstein, noting aloud that his eyes were clear, almost normal, and that his temperature was still falling. Heart's sounding a little better, too. Worn out by the 10-minute examination, Einstein flopped onto his side and issued a long, weary sigh. In a moment, he dozed again. The vet said, "He sure doesn't seem much like a genius dog."
"He's still sick," Nora said. All he needs is a little more time to recover, and he'll be able to show you that everything we've said is true.
When do you think he'll be on his feet? Travis asked.
Jim thought about that, then said, maybe tomorrow.
He'll be very shaky at first, but maybe tomorrow. We'll just have to see.
When he's on his feet, Travis said, when he's got his sense of balance back and is interested in moving around, that ought to indicate he's clear in his head, too. So when he's up and about, that's when we'll give him a test to prove to you how smart he is.
Fair enough, Jim said.
And if he proves it, Nora said, you'll not turn him in?
Turn him in to people who'd create this outsider you've told me about? Turn him into the liars who cooked up that baloney wanted flyer?
Nora, what sort of man do you take me for? Nora said, a good man. 24 hours later, on Sunday evening, in Jim Keane's surgery, Einstein was tottering around as if he were a little old four-legged man. Nora scooted along the floor on her knees beside him, telling him what a fine and brave fellow he was, quietly encouraging him to keep going. Every step he took thrilled her, as if he were her own baby learning to walk. But what thrilled her more was the look he gave her a few times. It was a look that seemed to express chagrin at his infirmity, but there was also a sense of humor in it, as if he were saying, hey, Nora, am I a spectacle or what? Isn't this just plain ridiculous? Saturday night he had eaten a little solid food, and all day Sunday he had nibbled at easily digestible victuals that the vet provided. He was drinking well, and the most encouraging sign of improvement was his insistence on going outside to make his toilet. He could not stay on his feet for long periods of time, and once in a while he wobbled and plopped backward on his butt. However, he did not bump into walls or walk in circles. Yesterday, Nora had gone shopping and had returned with 3 Scrabble games. Now, Travis had separated the lettered tiles into 26 piles at one end of the surgery, where there was a lot of open floor space.
We're ready,
Jim Keane said. He was sitting on the floor with Travis, his legs drawn up under him Indian style. Pooka was lying at his master's side, watching with baffled dark eyes. Nora led Einstein back across the room to the Scrabble tiles. Taking his head in her hands, looking straight into his eyes, she said, okay for a face, let's prove to Dr. Jim that you're not just some pathetic lab animal involved in cancer tests. Let's show him what you really are, and prove to him what those nasty people really want you for. She tried to believe that she saw the old awareness in the retriever's dark gaze. With evident nervousness and fear, Travis said, who asks the first question?
I will,
Nora said unhesitatingly.
To Einstein, she said, how's the fiddle?
They had told Jim Keane about the message that Travis had found the morning Einstein had been so very ill. Fiddle broke, so the vet understood what Nora was asking. Einstein blinked at her, then looked at the letters, blinked at her again, sniffed the letters, and she was getting a sick feeling in her stomach. When suddenly he began to choose tiles and push them around with his nose. Fiddle just out of tune. Travis shuddered, as if the dread he'd contained was a powerful electric charge that had leaped out of him in an instant. He said, thank God! Thank you, God! And he laughed with delight.
Holy shit, Jim Keane said.
Pooka raised his head very high and pricked his ears, aware that something important was happening, but not sure what it was. Her heart swelling with relief and excitement and love, Nora returned the letters to their separate piles and said, Einstein, who is your master? Tell us his name. The retriever looked at her, at Travis, then made a considered reply. No master. Friends. Travis laughed. By God, I'll settle for that. No one can be his master, but anyone should be damn proud to be his friend. Funny, this proof of Einstein's undamaged intellect made Travis laugh with delight, the first laughter of which he had been capable in days, but it made Nora weep with relief. Jim Keane looked on in wide-eyed wonder, grinning stupidly. He said, I feel like a child who sneaked downstairs on Christmas Eve and actually seen the real Santa Claus putting gifts under the tree.
My turn, Travis said, sliding forward and putting a hand on Einstein's head, patting him.
Jim just mentioned Christmas, and it's not far away, 20 days from now. So tell me, Einstein, what would you most like to have Santa bring you?
Twice Einstein started to line up the lettered tiles, but both times he had second thoughts and disarranged them. He tottered and thumped down on his butt, looked around sheepishly, saw that they were all expectant, got up again, and this time produced a three-word request for Santa. Mickey Mouse videos. They didn't get to bed until 2 in the morning, because Jim Keane was intoxicated, not drunk from beer or wine or whiskey, but from sheer joy over Einstein's intelligence. Like a man's, yes, but still the dog, wonderfully like, yet wonderfully different from a man's thinking, based on what little I've seen. But Jim did not press for more than a dozen examples of the dog's wit, and he was the first to say that they must not tire their patient. Still, he was electrified, so electrified he could barely contain himself. Travis would not have been too surprised if the vet had suddenly just exploded. In the kitchen, Jim pleaded with them to retell stories about Einstein, the modern bride business in Solvang, the way he had taken it upon himself to add cold water to the first hot bath that Travis had given him, and many more. Jim actually retold some of the stories himself, almost as if Travis and Nora had never heard them. But they were happy to indulge him. With a flourish, he snatched the wanted flyer off the table, struck a kitchen match, and burned the sheet in the sink. He washed the ashes down the drain. To hell with the small minds who'd keep a creature like that locked up to be poked and prodded and studied. They might have had the genius to make Einstein, but they don't understand the meaning of what they themselves have done. They don't understand the greatness of it, because if they did, they wouldn't want to cage him. At last, when Jim Keane reluctantly agreed that they were all in need of sleep, Travis carried Einstein, already sleeping, up to the guest room. They made a blanket-cushioned place for him on the floor next to the bed. In the dark, under the covers, with Einstein's soft snoring to comfort them, Travis and Nora held each other. She said, "Everything's going to be all right now." "There's still some trouble coming," he said. He felt as if Einstein's recovery had weakened the curse of untimely death that had followed him all of his life. But he was not ready to hope that the curse had been banished altogether. The outsider was still out there somewhere, coming. Chapter 10, Part 1. On Tuesday afternoon, December 7th, when they took Einstein home, Jim Keane was reluctant to let them go. He followed them out to the pickup and stood at the driver's window, restating the treatment that must be continued for the next couple of weeks, reminding them that he wanted to see Einstein once a week for the rest of the month, and urging them to visit him not only for the dog's medical care, but for drinks, dinner, conversation. Travis knew the vet was trying to say he wanted to remain a part of Einstein's life, wanted to participate in the magic of it. "Jim, believe me, we'll be back, and before Christmas you'll have to come out to our place. Spend the day with us." "I'd like that." "So would we," Travis said sincerely. On the drive home, Nora held Einstein in her lap, wrapped in a blanket once more. He still did not have his old appetite, and he was weak. His immune system had taken severe punishment, so he would be more than usually susceptible to illness for a while. He was to be kept in the house as much as possible, and pampered until he had regained his previous vigor, probably after the first of the year, according to Jim Keane. The bruised and swollen sky bulged with saturated dark clouds. The Pacific Ocean was so hard and gray that it did not appear to be water, but looked more like billions of shards and slabs of slate being continuously agitated by some geological upheaval in the earth below. The bleak weather could not dampen their high spirits. Nora was beaming, and Travis found himself whistling. Einstein studied the scenery with great interest, clearly treasuring even the somber beauty of this nearly colorless winter day. Perhaps he'd never expected to see the world outside Jim Keane's office again, in which case even a sea of jumbled stone and a contusive sky were precious sights. When they reached home, Travis left Nora in the pickup with the retriever and entered the house alone, by the back door, carrying the .38 pistol they kept in the truck. In the kitchen, for the lights had been on ever since their hasty departure last week, he immediately took an Uzi automatic pistol from its hiding place in a cabinet and put the lighter gun aside. He proceeded cautiously from room to room, looking behind every large item of furniture and in every closet. He saw no signs of burglary, and he expected none. This rural area was relatively crime-free. You could leave your door unlocked for days at a time without risking thieves who would take everything down to the wallpaper. The outsider, not a burglar, worried him. The house was deserted. Travis checked the barn, too, before driving the pickup inside, but it was also safe. In the house, Nora put Einstein down and pulled the blanket off him. He tottered around the kitchen, sniffing at things. In the living room, he looked at the cold fireplace and inspected his page-turning machine. He returned to the kitchen pantry, clicked on the light with his foot pedal, and pawed letters out of the lucite tubes. Home. Stooping beside the dog, Travis said, "It's sure good to be here, isn't it?" Einstein nuzzled Travis's throat and licked his neck. The golden coat was fluffy and smelled clean, because Jim Keane had given the dog a bath in his surgery under carefully controlled conditions. But as fluffy and fresh as he was, Einstein still did not look himself. He seemed tired, and he was thinner, too, having lost a few pounds in less than a week. Pawing out more letters, Einstein spelled the same word again, as if to emphasize his pleasure. Home. Standing at the pantry door, Nora said, "Home is where the heart is, and there's plenty of heart in this one. Hey, let's have an early dinner and eat it in the living room while we run the videotape of Mickey's Christmas Carol. Would you like that?" Einstein wagged his tail vigorously. Travis said, "You think you could handle your favorite food? A few weenies for dinner?" Einstein licked his chops. He dispensed more letters, with which he expressed his enthusiastic approval of Travis's suggestion. Home is where the weenies are. When Travis woke in the middle of the night, Einstein was at the bedroom window, only his hind feet with his forepaws braced on the sill. He was barely visible in the second-hand glow of the nightlight in the adjoining bathroom. The interior shutter was bolted over the window, so the dog had no view of the front yard. But perhaps, for getting a fix on the outsider, sight was the sense on which he least depended. "Something out there, boy?" Travis asked quietly, not wanting to wake Nora unnecessarily. Einstein dropped from the window, padded to Travis's side of the bed, and put his head up on the mattress. Petting the dog, Travis whispered, "Is it coming?" Replying with only a cryptic mew, Einstein settled down on the floor beside the bed and went to sleep again. In a few minutes, Travis slept too. He woke again near dawn to find Nora sitting on the edge of the bed, petting Einstein. "Go back to sleep," she told Travis. "What's wrong?" "Nothing," she whispered drowsily. "I woke up and saw him at the window, but it's nothing. Go to sleep." He did manage to fall asleep a third time, but he dreamed that the outsider had been smart enough to learn how to use tools during its 6-month-long pursuit of Einstein, and now, yellow eyes gleaming, it was smashing its way through the bedroom shutters with an axe. Part 2. They gave Einstein his medicines on schedule, and he swallowed his pills obediently. They explained to him that he needed to eat well in order to regain his strength. He tried, but his appetite was returning only slowly. He would need a few weeks to regain the pounds he had lost and to recover his old vitality. But day by day, his improvement was perceptible. By Friday, December 10th, Einstein seemed strong enough to risk a short walk outside. He still wobbled a little now and then, but he no longer tottered with every step. He'd had all of his shots at the veterinary clinic. There was no chance of picking up rabies on top of the distemper he'd just beaten. The weather was milder than it had been in recent weeks, with temperatures in the low 60s and no wind. The scattered clouds were white, and the sun, when not hidden, laid a warm, life-giving caress on the skin. Einstein accompanied Travis on an inspection tour of the infrared sensors around the house and the nitrous oxide tanks in the barn. They moved a bit more slowly than the last time they'd walked this line together, but Einstein seemed to enjoy being back on duty. Nora was in her studio, working diligently on a new painting, a portrait of Einstein. He was not aware that he was the subject of her latest canvas. The picture was to be one of his Christmas gifts, and would, once opened on the holiday, be hung above the fireplace in the living room. When Travis and Einstein came out of the barn into the yard, he said, "Is it getting closer?" Upon being asked that question, Einstein went through his usual routine, though with less exertion, less sniffing of the air, and less study of the shadowy forest around them. Returning to Travis, the dog whined anxiously. "Is it out there?" Travis asked. Einstein gave no answer. He merely surveyed the woods again, puzzled. "Is it still coming?" Travis asked. The dog did not reply. "Is it nearer than it was?" Einstein padded in a circle, sniffed the ground, sniffed the air, cocked his head one way and then the other. Finally, he returned to the house and stood at the door, looking at Travis, waiting patiently. Inside, Einstein went directly to the pantry.
"Muzzy."
Travis stared at the word on the floor. "Muzzy?" Einstein dispensed more letters and nosed them into place.
"Muffled. Fuzzy."
"Are you talking about your ability to sense the outsider?" A quick tail wag.
"Yes."
"You can't sense it anymore?" One bark.
"No."
"Do you think it's dead?"
"Don't know."
"Or maybe this sixth sense of yours doesn't work when you're sick or debilitated like you are now."
"Maybe."
Gathering up the lettered tiles and sorting them into the tubes, Travis thought for a minute. Bad thoughts. Unnerving thoughts. They had an alarm system around the property, yes, but to some extent they were depending on Einstein for an early warning. Travis should have felt comfortable with the precautions he had taken and with his own abilities as a former Delta Force man to exterminate the outsider. But he was tormented by the feeling that he had overlooked a hole in their defenses, and that come the crisis, he would need Einstein's full powers and strength to help him deal with the unexpected.
"You're going to have to get well as fast as you can," he told the retriever. "You're going to have to try to eat even when you have no real appetite. You're going to have to sleep as much as you can, give your body a chance to knit up, and don't spend half the night at the windows worrying."
"Chicken soup." Laughing, Travis said, "Might as well try that too." "A boiler maker kills germs dead."
"Where'd you get that idea?"
"Book. What's boiler maker?" Travis said, "A shot of whiskey dropped into a glass of beer." Einstein considered that for a moment. "Kill germs, but become alcoholic." Travis laughed and ruffled Einstein's coat.
"You're a regular comedian, Furface."
"Maybe I should play Vegas."
"I bet you could."
"Headliner."
"You certainly would be."
"Me and Pia Zadora." He hugged the dog, and they sat in the pantry laughing, each in his own way. In spite of the joking, Travis knew that Einstein was deeply troubled by the loss of his ability to sense the outsider. The jokes were a defense mechanism, a way to hold off fear. That afternoon, exhausted from their short walk around the house, Einstein slept while Nora painted feverishly in her studio. Travis sat by a front window, staring out at the woods, repeatedly going over the defenses in his mind, looking for a hole. On Sunday, December 12th, Jim Keane came out to their place in the afternoon and stayed for dinner. He examined Einstein and was pleased with the dog's improvement.
"Seems slow to us," Nora said fretfully.
"I told you it'll take time," Jim said.
He made a couple of changes in Einstein's medication and left new bottles of pills. Einstein had fun demonstrating his page-turning machine and his letter-dispensing device in the pantry. He graciously accepted praise for his ability to hold a pencil in his teeth and use it to operate the television and the videotape recorder without bothering Nora and Travis for help. Nora was at first surprised that the veterinarian looked less sad-eyed and sorrowful than she remembered. But she decided his face was the same. The only thing that had changed was her perception of him. Now that she knew him better, now that he was a friend of the first rank, she saw not only the glum features nature had given him, but the kindness and humor beneath his somber surface. Over dinner, Jim said,
"I've been doing a little research into tattooing, to see if maybe I can remove the numbers in his ear."
Einstein had been lying on the floor nearby, listening to their conversation. He got to his feet, wobbled a moment,
then hurried to the kitchen table and jumped into one of the empty chairs. He sat very erect and stared at Jim expectantly.
"Well," the vet said, putting down a forkful of curried chicken that he'd lifted halfway to his mouth, "most but not all tattoos can be eradicated. If I know what sort of ink was used and by what method it was embedded under the skin, I might be able to erase it."
"That would be terrific," Nora said. "Then even if they found us and tried to take Einstein back, they couldn't prove he's the dog they lost."
"There'd still be traces of the tattoo that would show up under close inspection," Travis said, "under a magnifying glass."
Einstein looked from Travis to Jim Keane as if to say, "Yeah, what about that?"
"Most labs just tag research animals," Jim said. "Of those that tattoo, there are a couple of different standard inks used. I might be able to remove it and leave no trace except a natural-looking mottling of the flesh. Microscopic examination wouldn't reveal traces of the ink, not a hint of the numbers. It's a small tattoo, after all, which makes the job easier. I'm still researching techniques, but in a few weeks we might try it, if Einstein doesn't mind some discomfort."
The retriever left the table and padded into the pantry. They could hear the pumping of the letter dispensing pedals. Nora went to see what message Einstein was composing. "Don't want to be branded. Am not a cow." His desire to be free of the tattoo went deeper than Nora had thought. He wanted the mark removed in order to escape identification by the people at the lab. But evidently, he also hated carrying those three numbers in his ear because they marked him as mere property, a condition that was an affront to his dignity and a violation of his rights as an intelligent creature.
"Freedom."
"Yes," Nora said respectfully, putting a hand on his head. "I do understand. You are a person, and a person with..." This was the first time she'd thought of this aspect of the situation. "A soul." Was it blasphemous to think Einstein had a soul? No, she did not think blasphemy entered into it. Man had made the dog. However, if there was a God, he obviously approved of Einstein. Not least of all because Einstein's ability to differentiate right from wrong, his ability to love, his courage, and his selflessness made him closer to the image of God than were many human beings who walked the earth.
"Freedom," she said. "If you've got a soul, and I know you do, then you were born with free will and the right to self-determination. The number in your ear is an insult, and we'll get rid of it."
After dinner, Einstein clearly wanted to monitor and participate in the conversation, but he ran out of energy and slept by the fire. Over a short brandy and coffee, Jim Keane listened as Travis outlined their defenses against the outsider. Encouraged to find holes in their preparations, the vet could think of nothing except the vulnerability of their power supply.
"If the thing was smart enough to bring down the line that runs in from the main highway, it could plunge you into darkness in the middle of the night and render your alarm useless. And without power, those tricky mechanisms in the barn wouldn't slam the door behind the beast or release the nitrous oxide."
Nora and Travis took him downstairs, into the half-basement under the rear of the house, to show him the emergency generator. It was powered by a 40-gallon tank of gasoline buried in the yard, and it would restore electricity to the house and barn and alarm system after only a 10-second delay following the loss of the main supply.
"As far as I can see," Jim said, "you've thought of everything."
"I think we have too," Nora said. But Travis scowled.
"I wonder."
On Wednesday, December 22nd, they drove into Carmel. Leaving Einstein with Jim Keane, they spent the day buying Christmas gifts, decorations for the house, ornaments for a tree, and the tree itself. With the threat of the outsider moving inexorably closer to them, it seemed almost frivolous to make plans for the holiday. But Travis said, "Life is short. You never know how much time you've got left, so you can't let Christmas slide by without celebrating, no matter what. Besides, my Christmases haven't been so terrific these last few years. I intend to make up for that."
Aunt Violet didn't believe in making an event of Christmas. She didn't believe in exchanging gifts or putting up a tree.
"She didn't believe in life," Travis said. "And that's just one more reason to do this Christmas upright. It'll be your first good one, as well as Einstein's first." Starting next year, Nora thought, there'll be a baby in the house with which to share Christmas. And won't that be a hoot? Aside from suffering a little mild morning sickness and having put on a couple of pounds, she'd not yet shown any signs of pregnancy. Her belly was still flat, and Dr. Weingold said that, considering her body type, she had a chance of being one of those women whose abdomen underwent only moderate distension. She hoped she was lucky in that regard, because after the birth, getting back into shape would be a lot easier. Of course, the baby was not due for 6 months yet, which gave her plenty of time to get as big as a walrus. Returning from Carmel in the pickup, the back of which was filled with packages and a perfectly formed Christmas tree, Einstein slept half on Nora's lap. He was worn out from his busy day with Jim and Puka. They got home less than an hour before dark. Einstein led the way toward the house, but suddenly stopped and looked around curiously. He sniffed the chilly air, then moved across the yard, nose to the ground, as if tracking a scent. Heading toward the back door with her arms full of packages, Nora did not at first see anything unusual in the dog's behavior. But she noticed that Travis had halted and was staring hard at Einstein. She said, "What is it? Wait a second." Einstein crossed the yard to the edge of the woods on the south side. He stood rigid, head thrust forward, and shook himself and moved on along the perimeter of the forest. He stopped repeatedly, standing motionless each time, and in a couple of minutes he came all the way around to the north. When the retriever returned to them, Travis said, "Something?" Einstein wagged his tail briefly and barked once, yes and no. Inside, in the pantry, the retriever laid out a message. "Felt something." "What?" Travis asked. "Don't know." "The outsider?" "Maybe." "Close?" "Don't know." "Are you getting your sixth sense back?" Nora asked. "Don't know. Just felt." "Felt what?" Travis asked. The dog composed an answer only after considerable deliberation. "Big darkness." "You felt a big darkness?" "Yes." "What's that mean?" Nora asked uneasily. "Can't explain better. Just felt it." Nora looked at Travis and saw concern in his eyes that probably mirrored the expression in her own. A big darkness was out there somewhere, and it was coming. Part 3. Christmas was joyous and fine. In the morning, sitting around the light-bedecked tree, drinking milk and eating homemade cookies, they opened presents. As a joke, the first gift that Nora gave Travis was a box of underwear. He gave her a bright orange and yellow muumuu, obviously sized for a 300-pound woman. "For March, when you'll be too big for anything else. Of course, by May, you'll have outgrown it." They exchanged serious gifts also, jewelry and sweaters and books. But Nora, like Travis, felt the day belonged to Einstein more than to anyone else. She gave him the portrait on which she'd been working all month, and the retriever seemed stunned and flattered and delighted that she had seen fit to immortalize him in paint. He got 3 new Mickey Mouse videotapes, a pair of fancy metal food and water bowls with his name engraved on them to replace the plastic dishes he'd been using, his own small battery-powered clock that he could take with him to any room in the house — he was showing an increasing interest in time — and several other presents. But he was repeatedly drawn to the portrait, which they propped against the wall for his inspection. Later, when they hung it above the living room fireplace, Einstein stood on the hearth and peered up at the picture, pleased and proud. Like any kid, Einstein perversely took almost as much pleasure in playing with empty boxes, crumpled wrapping paper, and ribbons as he did with the gifts themselves. And one of his favorite things was a joke gift, a red Santa cap with a white pom-pom on the tip, which was held on his head by an elastic strap. Nora put it on him just for fun. When he saw himself in a mirror, he was so taken with his appearance that he objected when a few minutes later she tried to take the cap off him. He kept it on most of the day. Jim Keane and Puka arrived in the early afternoon, and Einstein herded them straight into the living room to look at his portrait above the mantel. For an hour, watched over by Jim and Travis, the two dogs played together in the backyard. That activity, having been preceded by the excitement of the morning's gift-giving, left Einstein in need of a nap, so they returned to the house, where Jim and Travis helped Nora prepare Christmas dinner. After his nap, Einstein tried to interest Pooka in Mickey Mouse cartoons, but Nora saw that he met with only limited success. Pooka's attention span didn't even last long enough for Donald or Goofy or Pluto to get Mickey into trouble. In respect of his companion's lower IQ, and apparently not bored with such company, Einstein turned the television off and engaged in strictly doggy activities. Some light wrestling in the den, and a lot of lying around nose to nose, silently communing with each other about canine concerns. By early evening, the house was filled with the aromas of turkey, baked corn, yams, and other goodies. Christmas music played. And in spite of the interior shutters that had been bolted over the windows when the early winter night had fallen, in spite of the guns near at hand, in spite of the demonic presence of the outsider that always lurked in the back of her mind, Nora had never been happier. During dinner, they talked about the baby, and Jim asked if they had given any thought to names. Einstein, eating in the corner with Pooka, was instantly intrigued by the idea of participating in the naming of their firstborn. He dashed immediately to the pantry to spell out his suggestion. Nora left the table to see what name the dog thought suitable. Mickey. Absolutely not, she said. We're not naming my baby after a cartoon mouse. Donald. Nor a duck. Pluto. Pluto? Get serious, Furface. Goofy. Nora firmly restrained him from pushing the letter dispensing pedals anymore, gathered up the used tiles and put them away, turned off the pantry light, and went back to the table. You may think it's hilarious, she told Travis and Jim, who were choking with laughter, but he's serious. After dinner, sitting around the tree in the living room, they talked about many things, including Jim's intention of getting another dog. Pooka needs to have another of his kind, the vet said. He's almost a year and a half old now, and I'm of the belief that human companionship isn't enough for them after they're well past the puppy stage. They get lonely like we do, and since I'm going to get him a companion, I might as well get a female purebred lab and maybe wind up with some nice puppies to sell later. So he's going to have not only a friend, but a mate. Nora had not noticed that Einstein was any more interested in that part of the conversation than in any other. However, after Jim and Pooka had gone home, Travis found a message in the pantry and called Nora over to have a look at it. Mate, a companion, partner, one of a pair. The retriever had been waiting for them to notice the carefully arranged tiles. Now he appeared behind them and regarded them quizzically. Nora said, Do you think he'd like a mate? Einstein slipped between them into the pantry, disarranging the tiles, and made a reply. It's worth thinking about. But listen, Furface, Travis said. You're one of a kind. There's no other dog like you, with your IQ. The retriever considered that point, but was not dissuaded. Life is more than intellect. True enough, Travis said. But I think this needs a lot of consideration. Life is feelings. All right, Nora said. We'll think about it. Life is mate. Sharing. We promise to think about it and then discuss it with you some more, Travis said. Now it's getting late. Einstein quickly made one more message. Baby Mickey? Absolutely not, Nora said. That night in bed, after she and Travis made love, Nora said, I'll bet he is lonely. Jim Keane? Well, yes, I bet he's lonely too. He's such a nice man, and he'd make someone a great husband. But women are just as choosy about looks as men are, don't you think? They don't go for husbands with hound dog faces. They marry the good-looking ones who half the time treat them like dirt. But I didn't mean Jim. I meant Einstein. He must get lonely now and then. We're with him all the time. No, we're really not. I paint, and you do things in which poor Einstein doesn't get included. And if you do go back to real estate eventually, there'll be a lot of time when Einstein's without anyone. He has his books. He loves books. Maybe books aren't enough, she said. They were silent for so long that she thought Travis had fallen asleep. Then he said, If Einstein mated and produced puppies, what would they be like? You mean, would they be as smart as he is? I wonder. Seems to me there's three possibilities. First, his intelligence isn't inheritable, so his puppies would just be ordinary puppies. Second, it is inheritable,